Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Bob Burnham is our guest. And, you know, talking to Bob, I kind of realized that if it weren't for basements, garages, or kitchen tables, we'd be in the technology dark ages, because that's where most technology starts out with us as teenagers, right? Bob Burnham is our guest, and he's going to tell us all about his engineering exploits, and we're going to see some interesting things and learn about Canary Star Quad Cable. It's coming up next on TWiRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry, at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack. Happy April 27th to you. That's the date that we're recording this show. Well, we're showing it live on the interwebs, on Facebook and YouTube, as we normally do. And then it's available for replay and download later on. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. I'm in the Telos Alliance studio, could you tell? In Nashville, Tennessee. Glad to have you along. If you're watching live, welcome in. Glad you're here to watch the sausage being made, so to speak. And if you're watching by replay, glad to have you along too. Hey, set your podcast catcher, or if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe and like, and you know, tell it that you want to be notified of any episodes that we do. That'd be very much appreciated. We've had anywhere between 2,000 and 4,000 views of every show for a long time now. If you add them all up from all the different sources, and be delighted for you to make sure you download it automatically, or you get notified about the show, or you tell your friends about it, your other engineering pals. We were just at the NAB show, and oh my goodness, I got a number of people came up to me and said, hey, we enjoy your show, listen to it every week, or I listen to it when I'm mowing my grass, or I listen to your show when I'm blowing the snow off the sidewalk, or scraping snow out of the satellite dish. So I dearly appreciate all the great positive feedback that was given to me during the NAB show. That was really, really heartening. Very, very good to meet so many listeners. And a lot of our listeners are not full-time engineers. They are station managers or program directors who also have some engineering duties. They try to take care of, you know, the basic things around the studio, or even more than that. So it's great to have people listening who can hopefully use the information that we have to give. And today is no exception. By the way, Chris Tarr, I wish you safe travels, buddy. Chris is driving this afternoon from a big job he just did this week back to his home, his lair of engineering in Muckwonago, Wisconsin. So, Chris, please drive safely, and I hope you get home just fine. Look forward to seeing you as soon as you can make it back on the show. All right, that's enough of the preamble. I'm Kirk Harnack, and our guest today, I'm so delighted to bring him in. He is a friendly engineer, the kind of guy who likes to share his knowledge and talent, and he has got a lot of that built up over the years, and that is Bob Burnham. Bob, welcome in. It's good to see you.
Well, of course. Thanks for having me. It's good to see you as well.
Bob, I've known you, I guess, for some years on Facebook, but have we met in person ever?
I don't think we ever have. I've been to some MABs, which is the Michigan version, but I don't think we've met in person. So this is the electronic meeting, so to speak.
Yeah, I've been to a few Michigan broadcasters, too. I've always liked the Michigan show because broadcasters do this. In Michigan, they have the show, the convention, or they used to always have it, like in February or March, when it was super-duper cold in Lansing.
Yes.
And there's snow everywhere, because I guess the convention space is cheaper then. I don't know. Maybe they could trade
it. I don't know. That was the same problem with the with the auto show. They had it in January, which was the worst possible month.
They moved it to a better time. If you go to Texas, they have the broadcaster show in August, you know, just the hottest part of summer. They have it in August. Yeah. It's just blazing hot outside. So, oh, well, you know, I heard a joke this week, Bob. Remember WKRP and Herb Tarlick. Well,
of course.
Les Nessman was giving a news report. He says, well, we have bad news about Herb Tarlick. He was accosted this week in downtown Cincinnati. The robber got $50 in cash and $300 in trade. And those of you in radio know why that's funny.
I've known general managers like that. They'll trade anything, anything.
I bet you've got stories. Hey, so Bob, tell us, give us the elevator pitch about Bob Burnham. I want to find out who you are. And then we're going to, after a quick announcement from Nautel, we're going to dive into some of the stories and a lot of pictures. I love learning by pictures, and you've got a plethora of them. So tell us, who is Bob Burnham?
Well, I've written a lot of stuff for Barry Mishkin over the years in Radio Guide, which we don't have anymore, unfortunately, but a lot of my stories were in there. But I actually started in my parents' basement with a little experimental radio station. We like to call it experimental, of course, because it wasn't essentially legal, but I built my own console. Had one of those Lafayette 4-channel mixers that ran on a 9-volt battery. And said, well, it's only a 1-transistor circuit, so I can make that into a console. So I did. And that was kind of one of the starts of my career. But I built a 2-story shack when I was 12 years old in my parents' backyard and went and got these old tube radios, got them working, and built them into the walls of this shack. And figured out how to do intercoms. And so that was kind of the start of my building and my electronics, is getting old stuff that people were throwing out and making it work again. I became a fan of a local Detroit station that was playing old-time radio shows, WCAR, the original one, before Gene Autry bought the station. Every Sunday night, they would play old shows and I would air check them. And that was the start of one of my businesses, which is marketing old time radio shows. But I was also interested in the technical stuff, you know, how can we make it sound better? You know, stuff that's, 50 years old doesn't sound too good. So, it became a study in how to use equalizers and, you know, the technology that I had available at the time, which wasn't much. It was all analog, of course. And then along came my high school radio station broadcasting to the cafeteria and the halls. And I got elected to do the morning show. we called it Waste Radio at high school in Livonia, Michigan. And WSTE, I was the morning guy. And then from there, a friend of mine and I found out about a high school station not too far away that had an FM license. So I thought, well, let's go visit them. So we did. And it turns out they had an adult ed program. And I thought, well, let's enroll. Let's become part of that. And I quickly became one of the on-air people at the station, WSHJ. Which is the same station that our good friend Pat St. John at Sirius XM started at. I started there as well. And from there, I went to another local Detroit station. It was an AM station, WBRB, owned by Gilda Radner at the time. That wasn't a long-term situation, let's say. I rewired their remote trailer and they wanted me to be their chief engineer, but all I had was a third class license at the time. So couldn't do that, but I wanted to be on the air anyway and do production and whatnot. So, sometime later I wound up at WAAM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and they tapped into everything that I knew how to do there. And that became one of my favorite jobs. Was on the air every day of the week at night, and not the midnight to 6 a.m. guy either. I was early evening at that station. Yeah. And wrote all their commercials and produced them and whatnot. and fixed cart machines when there was a spare moment. Never had to do monitor points there, luckily. But so that was my first real career highlight at WAAM. So that was a fun job. That didn't last forever, though. And I took a course in broadcast electronics licensing from the Cleveland Institute of Electronics. Took that course and I thought, well, what do I do from there? And it turns out through a number of people I knew, I got my first contract job at an AM station in Jackson, Michigan, four tower directional daytimer, WJCO. And from there, I kept doing that for a while, and I developed the old-time radio business for a couple years into a full-time business. Knight Ritter syndicated a series of articles about me, and I had like thousands of inquiries for people who wanted these old shows. If you remember the movie Radio Days, Woody Allen, that was kind of the spark for that article. So that was my full-time job for a couple years. And then through the old-time radio thing, they got the idea to do the show myself that I first heard back in the 70s. So I thought, well, this could be fun. So I ended up on the new version of WCAR. The original WCAR became a country station, and they changed the call letters. So this little suburban station with 10 towers in a little town called Garden City, Michigan, became my new home. And I eventually became chief engineer there and worked with our local consultant, probably one of the best in Detroit at the time, by the name of Bill Mullen, and learned a lot, had a lot of fun, did some programs. And that kind of lasted for a number of years, 10 years, as a matter of fact. And a friend of mine who we had hired to be basically a board operator said, oh, you'd be perfect at Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. They want to do some stuff over there, and they have a new ENCO system that hasn't been installed, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought, well, okay. Oh, there was another little stint at Cumulus in there, but I didn't stay at Cumulus for very long. So I went and applied there and said, hey, how'd you like to work full-time? So I said, okay. They had 15 practice studios, all with cart machines and Otari reel decks and cheap cassette recorders. And they had just got in some consumer CD players. So that's going to be your job. Okay. So I did that for a short time as a full-time employee at the Spex Howard School, did some occasional fill-in teaching for our operations manager. And then they said, well, we have to upgrade. So little by little, took the cart machines out, and it became mini disc time. We all know it.
Oh, yeah.
Mini disc. You know, they were, a lot of stations were using those who couldn't afford to go with RCS or something like that. So I put three Sony mini disc machines in 15 studios and eventually replaced all the consoles. They had BE250 rotary pot consoles, and it cost $300 to replace a pot in those consoles, and another $200 if you wanted to replace one of the switches. So I thought, well, we better put some new consoles in. So we ordered Audio Arts D16s because they wanted something with digital in them. And that, as a matter of fact, is what I'm talking through right now, is one of the consoles that I kind of inherited, but that's another story. But anyway, we ended up with 15 studios, and they had four campus stations going at the same time. And they said, hey, we need six more studios, but all we've got is these little tiny video editing suites. and they're not using VTRs to edit anymore. So can you turn those into radio studios? So we bought six more Wheatstone Audio Arts D16s, and that was my life for about 6 months.
Oh my
and goodness. every one of them had on-air lights and the whole nine yards, auto skim. And the day came when they wanted to put Enco everywhere.
Ah.
We started out with Adobe Audition and Enco everywhere. Yeah. So how can we afford to do that? Because Enco computers are expensive. So what we did was we just bought the software keys and customized a bunch of cheap Lenovos. And that was another year of my life.
Oh, my God. Hey, Bob, I'll tell you what, we got some pictures to get to, and I've got some sponsors to talk about. So let's do that. We're talking to Bob Burnham. Bob's an engineer in near Detroit, Michigan, in the Dearborn Heights area. And he's been around a lot of places and had a lot of experience with directional systems, studio building. And we have plenty to talk to Bob about. Hey, our show is brought to you in part by Nautel. I got to spend a lot of time with Nautel last week at the Nautel Users Group meeting, and they made a big announcement last week about this new GV2 transmitter that they've got available. It's they're calling this the Radio Air Chain, and Nautel's vision for Radio Air Chain is to offer a lot easier and more affordable digital radio implementations. So that would mean HD radio. In the U.S., FM plus HD, certainly, with audio processing built into the transmitter. But basically, you take this FM transmitter, the new GV2, and you give it processed, well, even unprocessed audio, because you can get Omni audio processing built in to the GV2. So you can get HD, HD1, HD2, HD3, even HD4. You can process all this in the transmitter. And it fully supports HD radio with Xperia Gen 4 importer, exporter, and X-Gen implementations for HD radio encoding. You get your station logo, your artist experience, and it's the first solution that locks FM and HD signals synchronously to eliminate any HD-FM blending drift. Omnia for Nautel covers all FM and HD audio processing needs, and it provides live wire AOIP inputs if you want that for all your audio streams. No additional hardware is required, just this transmitter, and you provided audio. Like I said, the audio processing can be built in with Omnia Audio built in. This is an amazing advancement in getting everything into a box to make it easy for you. You don't have a mess of wires. You don't have a lot of complication. You just get your audio to the transmitter site and let the Nautel GV2 take care of the rest. You want more information on this? Well, they've got their announcement and some information on the new GV2 at Nautel.com. Look for Radio Air Chain, and you'll find all, you can read all about it there. This was one of the announcements that Nautel made at the NAB show. We'll be having someone from Nautel to come on and tell us more about this in the coming weeks, but this is a real good advancement for us engineers and for those needing to implement HD and HD2 and 3 and 4 radio channels. Thanks a lot, Nautel. Appreciate your constant advancement into technology and making our jobs easier here, simpler and easier. Nautel.com. Thanks a lot, Nautel, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack here in the Telos Alliance studio, and Bob Burnham is our guest. Bob, we want to get to some pictures here as soon as we can. You've provided quite a few, and some we can get through quickly. Others you may want to spend some time telling us about. So the order is going to be, you know, whatever numerical order they came in. So let's see what Suncast can pop up for us here. Well, looky there.
That is a Nautel ND5 that has been, as it says there, in service for many, many years. That's up at WMAX, operated by Ave Maria. And we had to fix quite a few things at that station because it wasn't changing pattern when it was supposed to. And the load on the nighttime pattern was way, way off. It's like 67 or 68 ohms or something, and that's all been fixed for the most part, and it's the controller has been fixed, but the that station has been a handful. That is the base for our translator in nearby Midland, Michigan, which is also a Nautel. It's a VS1 that we have at our Midland translator for WMAX, and that's all in mid-Michigan.
But that transmitter has been very reliable, even despite a bad load, especially with that nighttime pattern. So that's a real test.
It's had like two modules that were replaced a few months ago, as a matter of fact. But other than that, it just cooks along. It doesn't care what you hook up to it, point, of course.
Yeah, but, to a point.
Good exactly. Transmitter.
You're putting furniture together. We've both been there.
That was part of the Specs Howard School of Broadcast/Media Arts studio build. Those are I think that's from the production studio, which we may see a little bit later. The production studio has two places for people to work from, including two boards, two pods, etc.
I want to say one thing. For those in the broadcasting business, if you're an engineer and you're unfamiliar with some of the broadcast specific, put it together on site furniture. I got to tell you, this is the cat's meow. This was designed by Rod Graham. Is that right, Bob?
That's correct.
This is Rod Graham. Yeah. And I think one of the Rod, I got to talk to him one time. The aluminum posts that are those bent channel posts that are between the sections there. That's the genius of his furniture system. It lets him design different shapes and sizes, and your pressed wood panels that are then covered with laminate, they bolt right in. They bolt together, whether it's a rack mount size or whether it's an odd size, or as you can see, a panel there, it's turned backwards. It's going to get flipped around and go in. Rod Graham is just a genius for designing the system, and it lets us as engineers, Bob, me, lots of other engineers, put together furniture on site pretty quickly and easily. And I've still got furniture at my stations that furniture's got to be now almost 20 years old, and it just works well.
It lasts forever. It lasts forever. And Rod's retired now, but I met him as well at one of the NABs that I was able to make it to. And and there you have the two position production studio. As we were kind of getting it in place in the actual room, and one of the things we're mentioning earlier about budget changes, we couldn't afford a digital board for that studio, so we got the Arrakis Arc 10, and we had two of those in that studio, and couple of analog type devices in the upper racks, and the lower racks have power amps for the speakers, and I forget what else. I think a headphone amp.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the production studio at Specs Howard School of Broadcast, and this is a better view of it. And we were kind of putting it together, and you could see the two Arc 10 Arrakis boards, which are still available. And the keyboard drawers underneath.
What year would this have been?
Yeah.
This had to be about 2005.
Okay.
Suncast lives in that area. So
I was class of RTV 1101.
No kidding.
Huh.
So we have a Specs Howard grad online as well.
Yes, sir.
That's impressive. That's impressive.
Suncast sent me a note, RTV 1101, and I'm scratching my head thinking, what does that mean? What code is this? What cryptic code? So now I know. Thanks, Suncast, for explaining.
Radio and television, they changed it around over the years. We just lost our founder. Specs Howard himself passed away last year. And another of the production studio that we're looking at now. But the other one that everyone in Michigan knows in broadcasting is Dick Kernan, and he also passed away maybe about a year or so ago. So we were all close friends. That was what Those two guys were what made that broadcast school go. I mean, big time, because they knew everyone in the business. And this is a view of, I think, one of the production studio pods. As you can see, my method is making these little cable tie rings up the side, and you put AC up one side and audio and control up the other side. And, you know, that it made for a neat looking situation, obviously, easy to service as well, rather than, you know, having a rat's nest of where everything is just kind of dangling behind it. There's so many stations I've walked into that are like that. And it's like, oh no, I have to fix this. This is not going to be fun, but that's the way I build racks. And here is one of our, I called this studio Ready for a Morning Show Studio. And again, it's Graham Studios Furniture. And I think that's a Radio Systems analog console, which we later upgraded. Later upgraded that. Here's another shot of the other side of the production studio, dual side. I think we actually had a patch bay in that pod, which didn't stay in there very long, I'll tell you. But this is when I was kind of putting it together, and you could see I was having lunch at the same time.
Sure.
With the Wendy's cup and the manual. But that's the Arc 10. And the other thing that was kind of exclusive to our school was we had copy stands on a Luxo arm. And here again, this is a practice studio with the copy stand on a Luxo arm, Adobe Audition in the side. An Audio Arts D16 board, Graham Studios, and at the bottom you see the little cheap Lenovo or Dell computer that we used in all those studios, and months and months of my life building those. But that's one of the extra studios we squeezed into former video editing suites.
Nice. Okay. What's next then? Oh yeah,
this is the punch block cabinet, and I'm a big fan of Krone punch blocks. They're kind of hard to find now, but I got a bunch of them off of eBay, and they're a lot cheaper now because of that. Mm-hmm. But I would pre-wire one end of one of those and stretch the wires you see to wherever they needed to go, and then drop the wires from the console down to the punch block, and those blocks will pass both digital and analog. So I had AES running through there as well.
Yeah, and obviously these were built prior to audio over IP becoming popular, but you do have analog and AES CBU.
Absolutely. This is what happens when Sony stops making mini disc machines. You have to put in machines that take up twice as much rack space. Obviously, Tascam, the way we had it for students was the top two were for playing commercials, and the bottom one was making an air check. And I had those wired so they would auto skim. And another view of the finished production rack. The skinny wires are optical, toss link. And at the very bottom, I had ATI converters that went from whatever the digital format was to AES.
Ah, okay. Yeah, from toss link to AES. Sure. Hey, tell you what, we're going to pause it right there with this teaser photo for the next part of our show. You're watching This Week in Radio Tech. Our guest is Bob Burnham, and he's showing us some studios that he built back around 2005 or so, before audio over IP came in and before we started getting what we're getting into now, almost 20 years later. I mean, a good 17 or 18 years later now with some virtualized stuff. And instead of running the ad that we've been running for a long time for Broadcast Bionics and their studio workflows, I want to talk to you about something that Broadcast Bionics showed at the NAB show. And I was aware of this beforehand. We've actually mentioned it a couple times on the air here, but this is the Broadcast Bionics virtual rack. I got to see and play with it for the first time at the NAB show. And we're going to be talking to Dan McQuillan about this product when we come out. And here's what the deal is. You know, my employer, Telos Alliance, we've been working hard on containerized software products to do things that you need to do, like containerized audio consoles, containerized phone systems, containerized intercom systems, and containerized audio processing. And there's more to come. Well, these products can all run not just on a computer, but in a software container on a computer. The problem with software containers for most of us engineers in broadcasting is that they're a little tricky to set up. And by tricky, I mean you kind of need to know exactly what you're doing. Now, my employer, Telos Alliance, you can hire them to put in remotely, put in the software for you, make all the adjustments inside the server, in the Docker environment and all that. But there's a bit to it. But if you will get this product from Broadcast Bionics called Virtual Rack, it does the work for you. It's just amazing. It's kind of like opening up an app store in their product, in Virtual Rack. So you go in and you choose the products that you want. Now, none of them are licensed yet. You can install them without them being licensed, and then you buy the license from the respective manufacturer. There's more than one manufacturer where the stuff in here. But you say, hey, I want to install a Telos Alliance Axia Altus console. And you click on that app, and it installs in the virtual rack environment. You give it IP addresses, you give it proper names and studio name, that kind of thing. And the Dan McQuillan and his team at Broadcast Bionics have worked this up to where it will install properly. It will make the virtual LANs inside the VM, inside the virtual rack machine, that it needs to. And so it just says, hey, you can deploy containerized products without being a Linux expert. And that is key for broadcast engineers like me. I have done this myself in the, you know, the hard way. And I got to tell you, it's the hard way, unless you're an IT expert. But they've made this job easy for you at Broadcast Bionics. You want to check this out from Broadcast Bionics. It's if you go to bionics.co.uk or bionic, not plural, bionic.radio, you can go to their website and check out Virtual Rack. As I mentioned, we're going to be having Dan McQuillan on the show in the future, so some future week here, to describe and demonstrate how this works. I got a demo at the NAB show, and I was just absolutely blown away. And I got to tell you, my colleagues at Telos Alliance, have our development guys have seen this as well, and they like it. They like it. There's certainly applications where it's not appropriate, but there's other applications where it is appropriate, like, you know, my radio stations. So I hope you'll check it out too. Thanks a lot to Broadcast Bionics, and thanks so much to Dan McQuillan for leading a team of developers to help us in radio get some things done in the new virtual world that lets us move ahead without quite the steep climb in learning all about these products, these things, and these systems in the containerized world. So anyway, thanks a lot, Bionic. Bionics.co.uk or bionic.radio. We'll have a link in the show notes for you. And I'm really excited about Virtual Rack. By the way, it also lets you make more than one virtual rack, and one can back up the other automatically. It's just amazing stuff. So thanks a lot. All right. Hey, we're talking to Bob Burnham. He is an engineer from Michigan. And Bob's telling us and showing us pictures. I always love tutorials. I always love to see how other people do the same kind of engineering that I have done and sometimes still do, but they probably do it better. So I'd like to always learn from what other engineers have to show. So Bob, let's get right back into the pictures here. I recognize that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I was involved with the installation of the station in 1990, I asked our head engineer who had designed the place, what polarity would you like to use with these XLR connectors? And that's what that is. And he looked at me like, it's George Washington Bridge, which is ground white black, and of course white is equivalent to red, So I've always wired XLR connectors that way. Number one is always ground. Number two is always red or hot or plus or white or whichever. And number three is always negative or black or whatever. And after you've done a few of those things, that's with, it looks like blue Belden 9451, which has the shield built into the insulation. So you can strip those things instantly. And I got to the point where when I was building the studios at Specs Howard, I could do one of those in about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. They would bring me mic cables all the time that took a little longer because it was braided shield. But when you do a few of those, you can knock them off. And Neutrik or Neutrik, however it's pronounced, are the best connectors to use for that purpose.
They're so awesome. But I got to ask you about this picture. Now, just to clarify, you said George Washington Bridge, green, white, black. And here, left to right, we clearly have ground, black, and hot. So what gives here? What are the pin numbers? It's not 1, 2, 3 across, I suppose.
Well, you have to look on the opposite side of the connector and in very fine raised print, so to speak, it has the numbers. And it depends also on whether you're wiring a male or a female connector. One would be on the left side from this angle, and two would be on the right side from this angle. And that's the way that would go. But yeah, Neutrik is the way to go on those.
Yeah, I love those. And I assume that out of camera view, the back of the connector is already on this cable. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, good.
I haven't forgotten any of that. You don't want to solder one of those up.
We've got a couple other useful. Back to the studio build. Now those look like 66 blocks instead of Krone.
Yeah. Before I found out about Krone blocks, I was using some 66 blocks, and those were okay as well. But they seem to wear out a little quicker. And they're not as fast to work with, but that's a partially wired punch block cabinet from probably one of the practice studios. And those heavier gray multi-conductor cables are the digital cables. We had those pre-wired by Wheatstone.
Ah, yeah, yeah. All right, let's see what's next. Okay. This is the kind of connector that many folks really mess up. And I got three pictures here. They're kind of in reverse order. This is the finished product. This is a D sub, or some people call it a DB connector.
DB25. That's one. That's the best type to put together because, you can just crimp them together, crimp the pins on and shove them into the header and you're done rather than, having to use a high-powered microscope to do the soldering and messing it up. But that's the best kind of connector to use.
Now, what's the proper crimper to use?
The proper crimper. Actually, I probably have one in this room, but it's the one that Wheatstone supplied me with.
Gotcha. Yeah.
The ratcheting one.
And once you push that pin into the back of the D sub 25, if you put it in the wrong hole, you need to get it back out. How do you do that properly?
Well, there's a little tool that they also supply that you push it from the pin side, the opposite side. I think it's been a long time. And you may be able to get it from the other side, but if at all possible, don't do that because they are somewhat difficult to get out even with that tool.
Okay.
So that's the DB25 with the Belden 9451. It looks like the gray cable version that comes in several different colors.
Okay. I've had good and bad experiences with populating those connectors. And just like you, when I had the crimp style pins and the proper crimper, it goes together beautifully. And if you try anything else, you're likely to have trouble.
Use the ratcheting, the good ones that kind of are preset for that size of pin.
Yeah.
Because if you pinch it too hard, you break it. And then you might as well just throw it away, cut the wire, and start again.
Yeah, you're right. All right, let's skip ahead one then. And I saw this picture. I thought, man, you know, in radio stations, we used to have such a variety, like a three-ring circus full of equipment, and things kind of look much better now. Tell me what we're looking at.
Most of that is analog stuff for my old-time radio business, which it was all on reel-to-reel tapes at the time.
Right.
And right. And there's some equipment there to some equalizers and whatnot to clean up the audio. There's even a box there called the phase linear autocorrelator, which was a one-sided hiss reducer. It wasn't used much in the professional arena, but it was around in the 70s for reducing hiss. And after a while, I found that those things created more hiss than they removed.
Oh no!
I stopped using it.
What are the tube devices in the middle rack there toward the top?
That is an FM exciter and a stereo generator.
I thought so.
That's a Gates, I forget the model, 6095 or whatever. And that's what high school stations used in the early days. We were only running 10 watts.
Of course. Yeah.
And that came out in 1965. And that was one of my little experiments.
All right. Next slide here. Oh yeah. I saw this in your pictures and I thought, that's interesting. This needs some explanation. What time frame and what's this notification talking about?
Well, 8MK is the original calls for WWJ in Detroit, which was one of the first ever licensed stations in the US. There's controversy whether it was KDKA or WWJ, but that's some early dialogue related to that. And I guess they had scheduled times when they operated, and they talked about wavelengths, which no one today probably knows anything about unless they're amateur radio operators.
Right. So this was actually... I first read this and I thought, well, maybe they're talking to people who are providing reports back into the radio station, but no, this is the radio station itself.
This is for listeners, how they can listen on their, whatever they're listening on. You know, this was, early 30s, you know,
put in the newspaper. Hey, catch us tonight, starting at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, wow. We won't be on before then, but tune in and you can catch whatever we're doing at whatever frequency they were at that time. But WWJ is still in operation today.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Suncast, what's next here?
That is my translator in Midland, Michigan. That's the counterpart to the AM station that we saw a picture of earlier. That's a VS1 transmitter and an Inovonics mod monitor and a little workbench. And this is all in a little prefab building that we put together about 3 years ago where nothing stood before. Right next to a low power cable TV station and an abandoned cellular building. So we put up our own building, and that's the Midland connection for WMAX for Ave Maria Radio.
Ah. Yeah. Okay. That's the FM. All right. What's next? Oh.
And this is the AM, the opposite end of the Comrex stream, so to speak. That's a Nautel ND1 and an old Gates 1 kilowatt backup that still works, but we don't use it because it's not enough power for what the license says, but I noticed we run that.
I'm sorry. I noticed that at this site, you've got a sign systems remote control with looks like three panels of input and relay output. At the translator site, you had looked like to me a broadcast tools remote control. Am I identifying those correct?
That's correct. At the translator, we had a WVRC-8. And at this one, we have a sign systems, which we're on the verge of taking out, let's say.
Yeah.
And then the controller is a CSP design, which is now Phase Tech. You know, that's pretty much it. The Potomac in the top and some status lights at the very top. But I've spent a lot of time at that site, and it has AstroTurf for the floor.
I was going to ask you about that. It looks like AstroTurf. Yeah. Why make that choice? What's the benefit for you?
Well, a gentleman by the name of Gary Morrill, who I think you've had on the show before.
Sure. Yeah, I know Gary well, yeah.
He could tell you more about that because he was part of that installation. And another gentleman who is a very close friend, Lowell Hamburger, who is the owner of this station and who built this site that I almost went to work for at one point. But that's the three-tower phaser and another angle of the racks that we just saw in the picture before.
This picture right here is going to be the teaser for what's coming up next.
Okay.
And there are a couple pictures that are out of order that I want to make sure you stick around for, audience. And that has to do with microphone cable. I believe it's what we call star quad cable being soldered onto an XLR connector. Hey, if you know all about that, great. If you don't, you need to pay attention to some slides coming up in a few minutes after we take a look at this directional site. So it's all coming up. Bob Burnham is our guest. I'm the host, Kirk Harnack. Not enough Gatorade here. That's the problem. Hey, our show is brought to you in part, and Bob's going to help me out with this, but our show is brought to you in part by Henry Engineering. And, you know, Hank Landsberg has been a guest on this show. Awesome dude. He really gets it, helping out engineers like us to build studios and so forth. Hank has got a couple of cool products that Bob likes as well. One of them we're going to talk about first is the Sports Pod. It's a headphone and mic controller, especially. That doesn't have to be for sports remotes, but that's kind of what it's meant for. And Bob, you selected Sports Pods for a project that you're working on. Can you tell us why you picked this product from Henry?
This is a brand new installation, low power, probably streaming to start out for the Star Academy in nearby Dearborn Heights. And I picked this because this is going to be used by students, and they're going to be bringing in a variety of headphones to plug into this thing, and they're going to be nervous. And this Sports Pod allows them to control both the microphone and the headphone level, and I believe it will handle both quarter inch and eighth inch headphones, if I'm not mistaken. Okay.
Well,
it's got the cough button on it for mm-hmm. intermittent things, and you can turn it off and on, and it lights up when you turn it on, which is cool. And it's all connected by a bunch of Cat 5 cables, so you don't have to do a lot of screw terminal stuff. And, you know, everything is standardized on this device, XLRs, ins and outs. And it's a great product for what you need it for a remote talent, so to speak.
I really like on the Sports Pod from Henry Engineering that you can, each talent can control their headphone mix. You mentioned that already, but that's important because some people want to hear, you know, more me, and some people want to hear less me and more of the other talent. Or they ask for something from the station. They want to hear it better. Or, hey, you got a 2-minute commercial break from the station. You don't need to hear it that loud. Just turn it down a little bit. And that's all available to you. There's another product that Bob likes from Henry Engineering, and that's the Logic Converter. Bob, I have never used one of these. Can you tell me how you are using the Logic Converter?
Well, it does a lot of different things. We were talking about my adventures at Specs Howard, where they had 25 studios. Well, how do you get Well, how do you get auto skim to work, for example, when you want a recorder to be triggered every time you turn the mic on? You could do that easily with a logic converter, or if you want to start a player on your Enco system or whoever you use. Well, how do you do that? Well, a console will give you a pulse, maybe, but you may need a closure of some size, either normally closed or normally open. Whatever you want, the logic converter will do it for you, and it's relatively easy to hook up. The instructions are straightforward, and even if you've never hooked one up before, you can figure it out. It's a good product from Henry Engineering.
That's awesome. Thank you. Henry Engineering makes these and so many other products. The website is henryeng.com. And if you want any Henry products, pricing, availability, how quick can it ship to you, go to Broadcaster's General Store. These people are just the bomb. They are amazing. I got to spend some time with Buck Waters, Dave Kirsten, Shane Finch, Jessica Shute, all at the NAB show. And I'm looking forward to a trip with Buck Waters in a couple of weeks to the Pacific Northwest here in the U.S. You can go to their website at bgs.cc, or you can call them at 352-622-7700. You need to put that number in your Rolodex electronically or write it on the back of your hand or something. You need to have it always handy. 352-622-7700. They will make your life easier with great prices, sharp pencils on their pricing, so to speak, and a really good handle on when something can get delivered to you. I like them. Broadcaster General Store. Thanks a lot. All right. And thanks to Henry Engineering, too. All right. We're talking to Bob Burnham, and we're going to buzz through a few more pictures here at some installations, and then the teased Star Quad cable. So let's see what's next here, Suncast.
That is the outside of the site we were just looking at, three-tower array, WMAX, owned and operated by Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor. And that's pretty much the whole thing. They have the closest tower has the ATU right inside the building in a little enclosed area. But that's where all those racks are that we looked at. The satellite dish is no longer used because everything comes over Comrex Brick 2s and is sent to the translator via Comrex Brick 2s as well. So, gotcha. As I said, I've spent a lot of time there and more to spend, as a matter of fact.
What's next here? Suncast. That's the translator again.
That is the translator, probably before we had it quite finished.
Ah, okay. Good deal. All right. Next. Oh yeah. Is that called Unistrut? Is that what that is?
That's Unistrut. And that's something that was designed by Bill Mullen, a genius engineer who's now retired. But that's the prefab building for the translator that that we own. And it's real important to seal up the coax coming out of there, or you're going to have invasion of unwanted creatures, which we've had, even though we did seal it up. So they will always find a way into your building, whether you think you have it sealed up or not. So do it the best you can and figure it out later on.
So I got a question. For my own transmitter side designs, I have, just because I didn't think of it and I should have, I've never used Unistrut myself. Now I've added on to or changed somebody else's installation of Unistrut, but some engineers, their mind just goes there. Here's how they solve a lot of problems with Unistrut. It goes to the imagination, right? How can I solve this hanging, this overhead problem, this stabilizing something? And Unistrut is a good option. I don't often think of it. I haven't ever thought of it, actually. I just marveled at other people's thinking of it. Tell me about your experience with, using it.
It's only good for, one coax run, basically. If you have some heavier transmission lines for higher power, well, it's not going to get it done. But this is basically the ice bridge to the tower. That was totally Bill Mullen's design, and it's a wonderful design. It's been no problem. and we had a local power company do most of the installation.
It's simple and effective, and you can get Unistrut at several places. You know, you cut it to size and install it, and there it's so strong it just stays there. So
it's cheaper than regular H-bridge.
Ah, yeah, gotcha. All right, what's next? Our next picture.
These are cavities that we installed at both of the translators, especially important in the closer translator, which is in the Detroit area, Detroit metro area, because things are pretty tight, and those cavities take out what shouldn't be on the line. Even though the Nautel VS1s are incredibly good at staying clean and free of spurs, these make it even better.
Gotcha. All right. Oh,
and the antenna. That is the single bay that we put up in Bay City. It's a Nikon. I forget the model number, but it's the same basic antenna that we put up, a two-bay version at the nearby college station that I'm involved with. Mm-hmm. But that's a Nikon.
Yeah, a lot of... translators use those. Oh, this must be the ATU.
This is the it looks like the WMAX ATU that's inside the building. Mm-hmm. And two separate tuning networks, one for day, one for night. Some arrays do everything at the phaser. Well, this one is a lot more complicated than that. And mm-hmm. some of the adventures that I've had is replacing the contactors. Probably the one on top is one I replaced. And that is a piece of work to do that, because it's at a awkward angle and it's heavy and it's got a lot of connections and a lot of plumbing, and you got to do it right or you're going to mess something up.
I've replaced contacts before, and that's usually, you're right. They're ungainly and heavy, and it's a two-person job. Here, you hold this while I put the screws in. Yeah.
Yes.
I got a quick question, or I want to point out on the left-hand side in the middle, we have three different coils, and they are all at like different XYZ configurations. You know, one of them's kind of pointing in and out of the wall. One of them's vertical, one of them's horizontal. And this is done for magnetic electromagnetic separation between them. Can you expound on that a bit?
Not too much. That's mostly the design of CSP some 40 years ago. I know on this particular array, all the towers are used all the time, so it's not a detuning network necessarily. But we're still trying to figure out some things as to how this whole thing was designed, because they made a mistake when they built this array. One of the towers was in the wrong position. So they had to compensate for that.
Oh, no.
And it's been exciting.
What I was kind of driving at was I couldn't think of the word, mutual coupling, and having these in different axis planes.
One
of them, you know, it reduces significantly the mutual coupling. And you don't want mutual coupling, because then you adjust one and you end up having to fiddle with the other one. If they're arranged physically like these three are, you can adjust them pretty independently with very little, or certainly a lot less, interaction among the three. Let's move on to the next one here. Now this I've Common Point Bridge. Go ahead and tell us about this.
Good old OIB. This was the thing that I discovered when I was there at night one time, that the impedance was way off, and took a little time with the phaser and got it back, but 50J0 is what we like to see, as you know, and that's what we got on that. I had one of these, a portable one, but I sold it because I thought, you know, when I was working for Spex Howard of broadcast school, well, you know, I'm never gonna have to work with AM again. Well, it didn't work out that way. So luckily the sites I do the most work at have this built into the phaser.
Yeah. Yeah. I had one site that I worked at, where it was built in the phaser, but others, no, not so much. You had to bring your own. Hey, okay. So a question came in, and I'm sure well, let's just see what your answer is. You mentioned that, hey, this transmitter site operated for years with kind of a funky load at night.
Yep.
And the question came in, well, why didn't you fix the load? What circumstances led to having it operate, less than ideally for a long time?
Because I wasn't the engineer.
There you go.
Okay. I didn't become involved with Ave Maria until about, 3, 4, 5 years ago. And there's another engineer who lives in the area, but he wasn't so much of a directional guy, and he never went there at night. So that's why it was never fixed. And I spent a lot of time there, as I said, including from watching day turn into night, and you know, seeing 67J whatever, and said, well, that's got to be corrected. And it turns out there was a lot more things wrong than just the impedance, the input impedance of the phaser. The night phaser was particularly messed up.
Things break, and then phasers, you know, there's so many interdependent circuits and components there that it can be difficult. Let's hit a couple more pictures, and then we're gonna take our last quick break. What's next?
All right, this appears to be yes, that was after we installed the hardware firewall. This is the Southfield translator. This is the one in Southfield, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit. And there you see the Inovonix at the bottom, Mod Monitor, the Comrex brick. At the very top is the hardware-based firewall. And then an AT&T, or maybe that's a Comcast modem in there. But again, that's the Southfield translator.
Cool. All right. What's next? Oh, there you are with a phaser cabinet.
That's the rear of the WMAX daytime phaser, and that phaser is in good shape. And I'm probably happy about that. That's why I look happy about that.
Gotcha. Okay. Oh, yeah, I wanted to show the importance of a good solid ground. Is that what that is?
That was showing that, plus the importance of sealing up the entrance to the building. I think that's the ground put in by the electrical contractors. And there's the front of the translator with all the proper markings in place for the public and to make the FCC happy. And we've got a combination lock on the door. So I don't have to wrestle with keys. One of the few I don't have to wrestle with keys on.
Keys loose. Oh, and I put this picture in because I noticed you had a couple things. The Ravos thing is interesting. And then it looks like you've got a first aid kit right there at the door. Is that what I'm seeing?
Yep. That was something we did at all the Ave Maria stations in case I get injured, basically. And also keeping up with the, you know, the proper policies for, you know, I don't know what the word is, but and the fire extinguisher as well. That's a new fire extinguisher that I put in there. So that's the inside of the Midland translator, looking to the door, obviously.
Good deal. All right, next. Oh, it's me. Suncast, are you ready for me to take a break and then we'll hit the last couple of pictures? Hey, there's some of those Henry Engineering boxes.
That is at the nearby Star Academy with the podcast table that I had just wired for them.
Ah, okay.
It all came from Broadcasters General Store.
Well, good, good, good. Hey, we're going to save this picture for after the break, okay? Okay. There's a little tease right there. Say, well, why are those wires twisted together? Well, we'll tell you in a minute. Hey, it's This Week in Radio Tech with Kirk Harnack. My guest is Bob Burnham, and I love talking to engineers and looking at what they've practiced over the years, what their current practices are, and I always learn something. I hope you do, too. Hey, our show is brought to you in part by Angry Audio. Don't get mad, get angry. And here's one of your really good solutions here. I just heard Mike Dosh, Catfish, talking about this today. It's the USB analog audio gizmo. And here's the connections. You can see right there, it's got a USB connection, and then it's got audio in and audio out. And that's analog audio on with the standard studio hub wiring. And when you buy this, you get the adapters. They include that because you're gonna need them. You gotta build them yourself, or they include them for you, and they include a high quality USB cable with the proper connections on it, to go to this thing. The benefit of this $300 analog interface is that it's properly designed. And one of the proper designs about it is there is a separation in the grounds between your PC and your audio circuitry. And that's key. And I don't know of anybody else that has that. And it's key because it keeps it keeps it from being a ground loop. And that's so easy to happen. The ground in a computer is typically so dirty. It's just got junk on it. And that's why so many times, if you hook these things up and you listen carefully, you're going to hear a whine or a buzz. I do here in my office, hook up things that shouldn't buzz, and they do, because I'm mixing pro audio gear that's properly grounded with a PC, even though it's a Mac. I still get, I got to wire this baby up. I can quit showing to you and wire it up. So Angry Audio's got this and so many other cool things, including they're coming out with a new little audio console called the Rave. It's an analog audio console you're going to want to check out. So thanks a lot to Angry Audio for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Hey, we're also brought to you by Josh Bone and his Max Connect Wireless. And, Bob Burnham mentioned this guy a minute ago, and that is Gary Morrill. Gary's going to tell you why Max Connect is really good.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
You're going to be surprised at what all Max Connect does. Josh Bone's company is growing by leaps and bounds. They are an equipment dealer. They provide turnkey engineering services. They provide repair services, really a smart way to go. So if you are one of these broadcasters that, my local engineer isn't always available, my local engineer may not know how to do some of the newer things that need to get done, Josh Bone and his Max Connect group are just amazing. Check it out at maxconnect.com. And of course, you can find out more about the prioritized high-speed LTE internet service designed for broadcast applications. Hey, it's our final few moments with Bob Burnham. Bob, I'm sorry our hour has flown by. We've actually overstayed our welcome slightly, but I want you to tell me about this little. I got a chance to wire a couple of these, and tell me what we're looking at here with this funky cable.
Well, this is obviously StarQuad microphone cable, and you have to take your time preparing these things because the white and blue wire are all kind of intermingled with each other, and that's to do what balanced audio does to begin with, but take it a step further and reduce the pickup noise even more. And here's where I'm actually soldering an XLR connector with the StarQuad cable, a Nutrik connector, of course. And again, the same things apply. George Washington Bridge, there's a finished product. This is over at the Star Academy, a new private school in our area. And again, that's the way to do it. They last forever. And even if one of the conductors breaks, it'll still work. It just won't give you as much noise reduction.
And that's, since microphones are such a tiny, tiny low level, it's yes. easy for noise to get in with fluorescent lights or even LED lights. If the mic cable goes next to other cables underneath and the Star Quad cable, it's been a while since I've used it, so I'm so glad you had that picture, those pictures available. Star Quad cable is really quiet. Quiet in that it's extremely well shielded, and because of the way that they spiral the conductors inside, it's really good at rejecting noise. I think you'd say it has excellent common mode rejection, and because of that shield, it's got excellent rejection of everything.
Yes, it's extremely quiet. The popular brand is Canare, I believe.
That's right. Yeah.
And again, available in various colors. One of the things that people know about me is I like to use red, green, or blue colored mic cable.
Ah, okay. For
and with all my connectors. Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. Because a lot of the old installation is either black or gray. And when it's a colored cable, there's a pretty good chance that I installed it.
Bob, we got to go in a couple seconds. Tell me, you got a website here. It's brcradio.com. What will people find when they go to brcradio.com?
That is primarily a website for the old time radio shows. It's got a little thing up in the upper right hand corner that tells you click on there and it tells you what my broadcast services are. But that's where I have all kinds of radio shows that you can order from me. Mm-hmm. That's another phase of my business. And I do snail mailings, and people who get those snail mailings can just go to this website and order them up, and they don't have to buy a stamp to send me an order. So that's what that does. And that's going to be going through some changes as well. But yes, brcradio.com.
I haven't perused it completely yet, but you know, one of my favorite old shows was The Great Gildersleeve.
Is
that one of yours?
Sure. And I play those on our local college station, which also streams at WHFR.com or WHFR.FM.
HFR.FM. Okay. I'll put that in the show notes. Good, good. Hey, we are out of time. Bob, we got to go. Thank you for taking the time to spend with us and the time to prep for the show. I really appreciate your efforts and you sharing your wisdom and knowledge with me and our audience. Thank you.
Not a problem. It was fun.
It was fun too. We'll have to get together again sometime. That's Bob Burnham, and we'll have links in the show notes. Hey, we got to go now. Thanks a lot to Suncast for producing this episode of This Week in Radio Tech. And I'm looking to see coming up. I keep teasing the fact that we've got Dan McQuillan with Bionics coming. We don't have a date yet. Next week, a very amazing engineer and radio programmer named Thane Conrocht is going to be here. He does some amazing high-tech stuff to run his radio station in Oklahoma. And coming up also in a few weeks, how about this? We're going to be broadcasting live from Hawaii. That's coming up later on in May. So I hope you'll be able to join us for that. All right, we got to go. Guys, thanks again to Suncast and to Andrew Zarian. And we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech.